For January the 11th, 2023, this is Tabletop Talks Games, episode 232. So, it's a new year, and although I did actually play another game, if you've been listening, you know that this podcast has gone from being about all manner of games. I used to play, all type of games and all pretty much most platforms, and mostly single player, hardly ever any multiplayer games. And then during the last two and a half years at least, it's been almost exclusively Magic the Gathering Arena, and I've kind of done a 180, and now I'm just playing this multiplayer online game. And being one of those people that I've always looked down on, that just play one game and have a narrow view of gaming, in my opinion, that was my thought, that they were just stuck in this little corner and weren't seeing everything else. But then I was bitten by that bug, and I guess I was heading there anyway, because I was getting less and less interested in the games that are coming out. I felt like I'd seen it all before, although they were well made and had some interesting stories every now and then. Most games felt very samey, and I was kind of got bored with them after a while. During these last years, it's been amazing how Magic has continued to have this grip on me. I was really bitten by it back in the mid-90s when it came out. Played for a few years by friends until, we all got jobs and had other things to worry about, and that petered out. But now being able to play anytime, anywhere, almost, and there's always someone to play against, it just doesn't get old. And I'm really impressed by Magic the Gathering Arena, because people complain that kind of nickel and diming you or so, but I find it fairly easy to just remain a free-to-play player. I mentioned before, I put in total, I think I put in 60 euros, so it's about $60 if you're an American, in just like three different chunks of 20 each throughout the first year or so. And then I've not put in anything. I've just managed to, through the daily events and the... I mentioned before that my strategy, playing the daily events to earn gold and then using the gold to play limited, which will win you gems, which you can then use to pay for the master set or master pass. And so through that, you get a lot of rewards in the way of packs and cosmetics and things like that. So I've had no problem remaining on the free to play side. You just don't have to not be in too much of a hurry to get all of the cards and have to play everything all at once. I mean, I have almost everything now. I have above more than like 90% of all the cards in each set. Some sets there's one set I have everything except a couple of mythic copies of a mythic, but otherwise I have like 4 copies of everything. And so, I mean, if you stick to Historic, which is the mode where you can play with anything that you have, basically, except there are some bands, of course, but they don't get rotated out. So there you can just, I mean, there's an endless amount of possibilities of decks to build and so forth. So, anyway, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to just mention that I did get another game and played another game for Christmas. It was the Return to Monkey Island. I've played it on two or three occasions. It's fairly easy, actually. I'm surprised how easy it's been so far. And it's fun, but my son got his first gaming computer for his birthday and some games for Christmas, and I bought them on my Steam account, and turns out we can't play at the same time, which surprised me. I thought we would be able to play at the same time, even if we were playing different games. So that's kind of hindered me from playing Monkey's Island very much. So I've continued playing Magic. That's been the case. I was away for more than a week during Christmas, so didn't really push into anything other than Platinum. So I was dropped down to Silver after New Year's. And I've pushed back up into Platinum now, most of my time I've been spending in the play queue, just messing around with different historic decks. And there's so many interesting new cards in the Brothers War and the Archive. It's not called the Mystical Archive. It's called something else, but the Legacy cards, anyway, that you also get with the Brothers War set. There's so many interesting cards. I've just been messing around with all kinds of different lists, one deck that I put together was kind of constructed around Well of Lost Dreams, which is an older card. It's an artifact at rare for 4, and it reads, when you gain life, you may pay X, where X is less than or equal to the amount of life you gained. If you do, draw X cards. So this seemed like a perfect combo with Forsaken Monument. Which of course keeps me in historic. Forsaken Monument, as I mentioned before, one of my favorite cards. That's just so powerful and fun to play around with. So it gives all your colorless creatures +2/+2. And whenever you tap a permanent for colorless mana, you get an additional colorless. And also, whenever you cast a colorless spell, you gain 2 life. So really, really powerful legendary artifact at 5. It's mythic rare as well. So what I decided to do, since we have a bunch of new lands that will produce colorless mana, but still you can tap them for colorless mana as well, I thought this time I wouldn't go for a completely colorless deck. I decided to splash some black in here so I could get some death touch cards in here, so to make sure that to keep the opponents from attacking early on, Vampire of the Dire Moon. It's at 1/1 for 1 black vampire creature at uncommon. It has death touch and lifelink, and I thought that was a good start. You can just if you get one of those down, it can hopefully dissuade your opponent from attacking, and if they don't have a blocker, or if you just want to, you can attack, and it has lifelink, so you can get some extra life, which if you have the Wellspring, Well of Lost Dreams, I mean, in play, then that will allow you to draw a card. So, anyway, also as a protective measure, I have four Ornithopters in here. So early on, they'll just be like for protection. Usually, I'll try to keep them on hand until I get the Forsaken Monument out and the Well of Lost Dreams as well, because then you could get the opportunity to draw two cards for the two life, and you're not even paying any mana for the card, the Ornithopter being free. And then, of course, if you have the Forsaken Monument, it's a 2/4 flyer, so all of a sudden not such a little wimp. Next up, for Null Priest of Oblivion, I'll get back to why these are in here, besides the obvious of them having lifelink. They have that ability to kick them for an additional 3 in a black, which allows you to return another creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. So since I'm planning on boosting my mana pool with a lot of colorless mana, this extra cost should be fairly doable. I have a single copy of Mindstone in here that it's kind of in there because it's good to have, but I had more initially, but they've kind of been phased out to make room for other cards that I've wanted to put in. But there's still just the one in there. Three Circuit Menders. Another early blocker, since it's at least a 2/3. But then it gives you 2 life as it comes into play, and when it leaves, you get to draw a card. So, also working with that main plan of drawing a lot of cards and getting a lot of life. So even if you don't have the Forsaken Monument, you can trigger the Well of Lost Dreams, since it gives you 2 life when it comes into play. And of course, I don't know if I mentioned, but Sheoldred, the Apocalypse, is in here as well. Two copies of that. Great combo of giving you life as you draw cards. So if you draw a card, you gain life. The life allows you to trigger the Well of Lost Dreams, which allows you to draw more cards, giving you more life, and so on, for as long as you have any mana. Quite often with this deck, I'll have a lot more opportunities to draw cards than I'll actually be able to use, because I won't have that much mana. So, it gets pretty crazy. I have a single copy of Inspiring Sanctuary in here. This is also in one of the newer cards, or it's a newish. It's from an older set. It's come back, and it's a artifact for 3, and it's at rare. And it reads: non-artifact spells you cast have improvise, which allows you to tap any artifact to pay for 1 mana. So if you need some extra mana to get your non-artifacts cards in play, then you could use that. Doesn't come up very often, so I'm thinking about taking it out, because usually it's not the non-artifact cards that I'm having to save up for, so to speak. It's the other ones. So we'll see how I do that. Then I have a single copy of Thrawn Spider, which is a new artifact creature from Brothers War. Costs 3 at rare, and it's an artifact creature spider. It has reach, and is a 2/4, and it reads, when Thrawn Spider enters the battlefield, you can target you and target opponent each create a tapped Power Stone token. And then for 7, you can look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal an artifact card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So first, Power Stone. I think this is a new, at least new for me. It's haven't seen it in any other sets so far in Arena. But a new kind of artifact token, which you can tap for a colorless mana, which can it reads really as a strange text. It reads, you cannot use it to cast non-artifact spells. So what you can use it for is of course artifact spells, but then also activated abilities. Well, those I guess are the two things. You can pay for your companion if you're playing with a companion, for instance, as well. And I believe you can use it to foretell as well. So that's that. Then I have a single Celestis, which works well here as well, giving you life and drawing you cards. So that can trigger both Sheoldred and the Well of Lost Dreams. Then 3 Forsaken Monument, as I mentioned. 1 Blade Coil Serpent, which I'm testing out in this deck. It's a new card from the Brothers War. It's a mythic rare at 6 and X, or X and 6. It's a serpent, and it's a 5/4, and it reads, when Blade Coil Serpent enters the battlefield, for each pairs of blue mana spent to cast it, draw a card, and for each pair of black mana used to cast it, each opponent discards a card, and for each pair of red mana used to cast it, it gets +1/+0 and gets trample and haste until end of turn. So pretty powerful creature. Usually what I'll want to do here is draw more cards or have the opponent discard. I don't have very many red sources, so that is more of a bonus if I can use that ability. Then for good measure, since this is a Forsaken Monument deck, I have 2 Ugin the Ineffable to help with casting of all the artifact creatures, making them cheaper. And 3 copies of Ugin the Spirit Dragon. Of course, since it's just too good to not have in this type of deck. Lastly, another star of the deck, another of my new favorite cards. This is from the Alchemy portion, I guess, of Brothers War. It's the Forge Fire Automaton. It costs 7. It's a mythic rare artifact creature construct. And it has the prototype ability, which allows you to cast it as a 3/2 for 2 and a black. And then it reads, at the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card with power less than Forge Fire Automaton's power from your graveyard to the battlefield. Its base power perpetually becomes equal to Forge Fire Automaton's power. So what you really want to do is get this into play as an 8/5 and then start bringing back your little critters, making them have power 8. So especially the Vampire of the Dire Moon coming back with Death Touch and Lifelink being an 8/1 is pretty nice. Of course, allows you to draw even more cards with the Well of Lost Dreams. Ornithopter is a favorite here as well to get that back. Of course, usually you're casting it early on for the prototype price, so it comes in with 3-2 as a 3-2. But then later on, as I mentioned before, the Null Priest of Oblivion is perfect for bringing it back from the graveyard as that fully realized 8/5 creature. These tend to not stick around very much. They're usually killed right away, so it's not that often that you get to get your creatures back. But it's really fun when you do. So I really love playing this deck. The rest is just different lands that produce colorless mana, as well as some colored mana. So I'm not going to go through those, but yeah, a lot of fun to play this deck. I've been playing around with it in the play queue. It's not really fit for ranked. It's not competitive in that way. But I do have a 57% win rate in the play queue. So it does do well there. Don't really have time to go through anything else right now. I'll try to get back and do another episode fairly soon. But yeah, that's me. I'm all tapped out. Your turn.